You're listening to Boston Public Radio. I'm Edgar B. Herwick III. Well, there's something pretty cool that's happening at the Somerville Theater in Davis Square this Saturday. Three early short films by Buster Keaton are going to be screened. And as great as that sounds, that's not the cool part. The cool part comes courtesy of the Alloy Orchestra. These are three guys based in Cambridge, Massachusetts, right here, and they're the best in the world at what they do, which is scoring old silent movies live. But stay with me. They have a very unique and modern twist to what they do. They're with me here now in the studio. I'm going to introduce them to you right now. Ken Winokur, who's the director of this Alloy Orchestra. He's also a junk percussionist and a clarinetist. How you doing?
Good to see you.
We've also got Roger Miller, who plays keyboards and another assortment of things for the Alloy Orchestra.
Sure enough. Glad to be here.
And we've got Terry Donahue also on the junk and accordion, musical saw, vocals, the whole nine yards, right?
Whatever we need.
So, guys, you've been doing this for how long now?
23 years.
And how did it all get started?
It started kind of by accident. A film programmer at the Coolidge Corner Theater in Brookline, a man named David Kleiler, wanted to show the 1980s restored version of Metropolis. He didn't think the musical score, which had Freddie Mercury from Queen, Pat Benatar,
right.
Loverboy, Adamant.
Right.
He didn't think that that was quite appropriate.
Wasn't really working for his vision.
For his vision. So he asked us if we would come up with something, and he gave us 2 weeks, and we said, sure, this will be fun. We'll play it for a weekend.
Ken, had you ever done this kind of a project before, some kind of like a film scoring type thing, or were you just game for this?
Well, we individually had done a little everything, a lot of performance art things. We'd existed at that point only for one show, which was playing on a giant, even way bigger, junk metal sculpture in the Boston Common for First Night. Mm. And that was the first time we really used the name Alloy Orchestra. But together in this group, we'd done theater performances, rock, jazz, performance, you name it.
So we keep referring to this junk. First of all, what
really
is...
really not a more polite way of referring.
So what is the junk, Roger?
Well, it's stuff. It's mostly up to Ken and Terry to create it, so I'll let them talk about it because the percussion instruments, and I'm not on them that much.
You stay away from the junk.
Well, I put some junk into my keyboards, but it's a different thing.
Different kind of junk.
Duct tape also I like on my keyboard.
Yeah, yes. Is this something that you guys have always done as musicians? Where did that start, the idea of collecting junk and playing it?
Well, both Terry and I had a fairly extensive history of doing this, and my favorite story is when I first moved to Boston, I went to see a rock band called Arcade Ambo. And on stage was a percussionist with a very minimal kit that included a large steel pipe. And this was Terry, and he was playing with extreme and surprising musicality on this pipe, and I was literally inspired by it. But I took it to extreme proportions, and I,
as one would like.
Would you even say ridiculous proportions?
Yes, absolutely.
That's good. Terry, well, so where did you get the idea to be playing a giant steel pipe?
Well, I had always picked up, whatever I found that played, around the house, pots and pans, anything like that. And when I started playing in this particular band, I was the second percussionist. So I found this pipe in the trash and hung it up there by a string. And it was surprisingly musical. I don't know if I really did anything, but the pipe itself is spectacular. And I'm sorry I've lost it.
A
piece of history gone forever. But, it was the seed that grew into the Alloy Orchestra. So Ken took it to the extreme, of course, and built this big giant rack of junk, which we have expanded on between the two of us. And we never thought you'd need really two junk percussionists at the same time, but it's the old
true. I knew
you always had that vision.
It's the old two heads of
Glenn Miller and the Glenn Miller story. I'm trying to find that sound, and who knew that sound was two junk racks?
That's the
sound. What is the junk? Like, what are some of the pieces of junk?
Well, in the current junk setup, there's plumbing pipes, horseshoes, there's a bedpan, there's a piece that we call the sheet of metal, bent metal.
There's piece we found in the trash that you can either play like a gong or bow, like a kind of terribly sounding musical saw. We have a set of what we call cake pans that I stole from a restaurant that I used to work at.
That's cake pan right there?
Cake pan right there. So they become, they're all different sizes, so it's sort of like a weird out-of-tune steel drum.
Yeah.
And we used to build a lot more of our drums, but once we started traveling and going on airplanes, we use regular drums. We take a regular drum set and sort of tear it apart and spread it around the kit. And then we add the musical saw, and we add the accordion, and then the clarinet, and whatever needs to be added. And a little of that sometimes.
Why not?
Sure.
You
got to
do it.
I'm talking with
it's
the Alloy Orchestra here. They're going to be at the Somerville Theater this weekend, Saturday. They're going to be scoring a number of Buster Keaton shorts. We'll get into that a little bit later. Roger, you mainly do keyboards for this outfit. How does your sort of piece of it mix with these junk percussion?
Well, in the keyboard that I have, you know, in a given film, it goes through like 50 or 70 different patches. Like I have a sequence of, you know, the first scene is strings, second scene is piano, et cetera. It's kind of the orchestral element of the band. You know, you have the big strings and the oboes, but it blends really well with the junk metal because I personally am not fond of playing orchestral sounds on a keyboard. You should have an orchestra, but it's tempered by the fact that these guys are beating on pieces of metal and just slamming on drums. So it makes me feel comfortable doing that kind of thing. But so I give generally the more harmonic and melodic content, though these fellows also do that with their clarinet and accordion. But that's my primary job.
So it's interesting because it sounds like you're not trying to mimic what might have been played in Buster Keaton's time or in Charlie Chaplin's time or when Metropolis was out, right? I mean, you guys are playing on things that wouldn't have been played then.
Well, you know, there's a lot of debate on this. The period of time that the silent films came out was one of the richest periods of experimentation in music. They completely blew open the whole harmonic canon in those days. And the futurists and Dadaists in Europe at that time were literally doing noise music, they would call it, playing on found objects, homemade crazy instruments, doing things that we, you know, associate as being contemporary music, but it really did start back in the teens.
But we don't go back in time necessarily musically. What we do is look at each piece that we're performing to and write music that we feel works with that film right now. So we're not trying to sound like the 20s by any stretch, but we want to be appropriate with the film.
Yeah, our goal is to bring these films to people in the present. It's now the 21st century, so we don't want people to think of them as old-fashioned and dusty. Our job is to make people feel that they're vibrant and alive now. And to that end, we'll do whatever is required. You know, the film tells us what to do.
I'm talking about the Alloy Orchestra. We're talking about the process of scoring old films live in this day and age for audiences. They're going to be doing a number of Buster Keaton shorts at the Somerville Theater this Saturday. We've got some of their instruments in front of us. I wonder if I can get you guys to play a little bit right now. Just give us a little live sampling of what your sound might be. We've talked about it enough. Let's hear a little bit.
Well, we don't have the keyboard, so it's just the musical
song. Stripped down.
It's very, very stripped down.
I'll be playing some other stuff to fill in the holes.
Very nice. Yeah. All right, that's Ken Winokur, Terry Donahue, and Roger Miller. They are the Alloy Orchestra. Guys, what's the process like? Do you guys sit and watch the movie and take notes? Do you talk to each other? Are you jamming? Like,
well, we're working on one right now called The Debt of the Father. Is that the correct?
Against the Father.
Against the Father. It's a Russian Jewish film from the late 20s, I believe. And we put it in the computer, and then we're in our recording studio, and we watch it scene by scene, and we just improvise. We just make themes up, and sometimes we'll discuss it in depth ahead of time if there's, you know, counterpoint and harmony. And then we'll just go scene by scene and come up with a riff and motifs, and in this case, record it directly. But
It's interesting because it's all very collaborative, the three of us. It's not like one of us sits down and scores a film and then passes out
sheet music. And then,
Right. The three of us really work together. We try to find the basic mood of a particular scene and come up with kind of a basic feeling for that scene. And in this case, if we're recording it, we polish it right up and make it fit. If we're just scoring for a performance first, then we'll get basic ideas scene by scene by scene by scene, and then we go back and listen again. And if we think the scene worked, and then we sort of elaborate it and mold it to fit the scene. And then you take whatever, the 150, 200 cues, and try to blend them into one seamless performance.
It's easy for us at this point to come up with thematic material and ideas. The harder, much more difficult part is to perform a film that's an hour and a half long seamlessly, you know, and make it work so that everybody knows where they have to be the next second, you know. That's the harder part.
Are you playing every moment with something like Metropolis, which is out, you know, more than 2 hours long? Are you guys like going the entire time?
There's two or three sections of 3 or 4 seconds where we don't play Metropolis.
Otherwise, we go. Yeah, that's the hardest thing we do is not play. There's a couple moments. We did a film called Strike, which was the first film that Roger played with us. We had a previous keyboard player named Caleb Sampson. And when Roger came along, we were doing this film called Strike. And the pivotal moment was when one of the characters gets accused of stealing and can't face it and hangs himself. So we're at that scene, and, you know, what do? So we thought the best way to go about that was to stop dead and let that silence ring for a minute and then come back in strong. But we don't do that very often.
That's what made it effective, is that we're almost never quiet,
yeah. After you did this one-time gig, or what you thought was a one-time gig, how did it grow into being something that you did regularly, like these older movies? Were you guys silent movie nuts to begin with, and it just worked this one time and you kept going, or?
Well, we, I think, knew in rehearsals and definitely in the middle of the first performance that some really astounding symbiosis was happening. Mm. The amazing 35-millimeter, you know, projection glowing off the screen with a fun, compelling live performance really, it works doubly on people. It's a multimedia experience, and people get really consumed by it. So we were very aware of this. The response was overwhelming. We were maybe a little surprised by that. And we essentially just came home and said, we're doing more of this. And we just started looking for different films, and we did a lot of performances in Metropolis. I mean, hundreds and hundreds.
Now you're doing Buster Keaton shorts here. This isn't the first time that you've done Buster Keaton's work.
We've done many Buster Keatons. We've done Steamboat Bill Jr., which is a feature film. We did The General, which is really great for us, which is another feature film, one of the greatest films ever made. We did a whole series of Buster Keaton with Fatty Arbuckle, Roscoe Fatty Arbuckle shorts, which two of these ones that we're going to be playing on Saturday are Fatty Arbuckle shorts. One is The Butcher Boy, which is Buster Keaton's very first screen performance. Another one, Good Night Nurse. And then Buster Keaton, another little masterpiece of a short called The Playhouse, where it's all Buster Keaton. And we'll be playing some clips from that shortly.
It's almost like a little tour of Buster's career, starting literally from his first screen appearance and then into The Playhouse, which is mid-era Keaton, who had a relatively short career, actually. It's just him at his most sophisticated. He's the writer-director. Not only is he the star, but he actually plays 20 roles, sometimes simultaneously on screen, through very elaborate montaging, which still shocked me. They were so sophisticated.
It's beyond belief.
Do you feel like you're collaborating with him in a way?
Well, not just with him, but with every film we do. We try to find the rhythm and the emotion of the film and really try to slide in with it. I mean, it sure helps to do great films, which is what our goal is, to try to find the best films we can. One, it's easy to watch the things 120 times.
Yeah.
And then it makes our job a lot easier. You start with a great film, you just kind of go along for the ride once you find the rhythm and the emotional content. And then while we perform, we're watching the screen 90% of the time. So each performance it's like a work in progress, even though they've been very elaborately scored, because different things might happen because of what you're watching. And so it's the interaction between the elaborate score, the liveness of it, the film going on, and us reacting to each other and the film at the same time.
I'm speaking with the Alloy Orchestra. That's Ken Winokur, Terry Donahue, and Roger Miller. They're going to be Saturday at the Somerville Theater, and they're going to be doing these Buster Keaton shorts, including The Playhouse. Now, we have a couple of cuts from The Playhouse. Mm-hmm. So I want to give a sense of what it sounds like when you've got your full orchestra, you got your keyboards and your junk drawers and everything going. And I wonder if we play a couple cuts, and maybe you can talk us through what's happening on the screen so that we kind of understand how it works.
The first one is you'll hear the little three taps of Buster Keaton as the conductor of the orchestra in the orchestra pit. Then when the music starts to play, it pans back and you see that the whole orchestra is Buster Keaton. He's playing
like Bugs Bunny playing the baseball game, Bugs at first, Bugs at second, Bugs at plate, Bugs pitching to Bugs.
That's exactly right. So he's playing everything. So this first piece is him being the orchestra.
All right, let's hear it. So it's playful. I mean, it's
completely playful, and so the solo's on a specific instrument. You heard the clarinet. You know, the rest of the band was turning around, wondering what he was doing. So they stopped for a second, and there's the string bass player doing weird things, and the you'll hear the trombone player making a mess of things, and then it eventually turns into a whole giant mess, and it all falls apart.
Yeah. So this is a scene that's kind of tailor made for what you guys do because it's somebody playing music. So it's pretty. If there's a trumpet playing on screen, you're like, well, right here, I think we're going trumpet.
And more than that, it's total chaos. Yeah. You know, it's ludicrous. It's hysterically funny and irreverent. So it hits us in every level.
Yeah. But it's also very complex. I mean, he's literally interacting. He's looking at himself. You know, Buster Keaton, the clarinetist, is looking at Buster Keaton, the bass player, and winking at him, and you know, like as if they're talking to each other. And you know, they were shot at different times.
Yeah.
He couldn't do that.
Totally cool. All right, let's move on. Let's hear another cut here.
Buster Keaton, it's a little darker. Buster Keaton is being woken up by the giant stage manager. It turns out this whole orchestra thing was a dream, and he's sleeping on the job. So the boss is angry, and he's shaking him around and saying, you know, time to get up and go to work. So
yeah, Buster was thinking he was a superstar, like he was on stage and everyone loved him, and now I find out he's an absolute nobody.
Nice.
And in typical Alloy fashion, we take a dramatic scene and we make it ridiculously more dramatic.
What's happening here?
Suaves.
Well, this is where he wakes up and the stage crew starts putting the stage together for the performance it's going to be. And it's also sort of foreshadowing. It's going to be another piece that we're going to hear later where there's you know, more chaos going on. So it's a piece where things start to happen on the stage.
If there's chaos in a movie, we find it.
Yeah, that seems to be the thing you're looking for. Like that, you're most comfortable in the chaos. All right, let's hear another cut here.
Suits us well.
From later in the film. This is a Buster Keaton film, The Playhouse, and I'm talking with the Alloy Orchestra, who will be playing what you're hearing live at the Somerville Theater on Saturday. Very percussive.
Very percussive.
I imagine this is the junk being played right here.
That's the famous cake pans that we were talking about.
The scene is, we call it dressing the monkey, because Buster Keaton accidentally, on a vaudeville show, let the orangutan loose. So now Buster Keaton has to dress up like an orangutan, and he's kind of has to convince his boss that he's actually an orangutan, and it doesn't quite work, but that's what we got going.
Yeah.
We got going here, that kind of vibe.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. Where do you guys draw, I mean, where are you guys drawing your influences from? I mean, you're musicians who I imagine are involved in projects outside of this. Where do you look to for influence?
Well, I think one of our strengths is that we all have extremely different backgrounds. Well, we all have a rock background, and that's sort of how we got to know one another. But Roger is actually classically trained, and you know, he knows all the notes on the whole keyboard.
There's a lot of them.
We at one point described Terry as a journeyman rock drummer until we realized that journeyman wasn't exactly a compliment.
Right, right.
And I've done a lot of Latin and African stuff. And you know, like I said, we've done theater and film scoring. And so, you know, we really have this very wide influences. And because the films, you know, go every direction, it's really great that we can kind of just, you know, reach out and pull something from our past.
And from watching films our whole lives, it just, as a musician, even if you're not thinking about it subconsciously, you're aware of what music goes with what film, so it just sort of happens. You know, you just kind of just start to play.
Yeah.
And then we interact and react with each other as we go along.
Probably collectively, one of our models would be Carl Stalling with the Bugs Bunny. He did the music for Bugs Bunny and stuff, and just his over-the-top, ridiculous stuff. Like, we don't try to mimic it, but that's a very informative aspect for us.
And, you know, certainly for the comedies. But, you know, we play a lot of very dramatic films and obviously play dramatic, serious music to go along with those.
Yeah.
Roger once described our style as being classical music with a rock attitude. Yeah. I thought was pretty good.
I mean, it's interesting that you guys have this rock background. I mean, Roger, you know, you're one of the founding members of Mission of Burma, which is a legendary rock group formed here in Boston. What about the rock spirit is reflected in this? You know, because I think from the outside, somebody could be like, well, it's like old, you know, scoring old films. How fuddy-duddy. And yet you guys are like, no, this is a rock and roll endeavor right now.
Well, so I think a little bit of it is like you're not afraid to just go heads dead ahead, you know, at high speed.
Yeah.
You know, just let it go and just like, hey, we're going to take off now. That's definitely part of the Alloy experience. Like, let's go, you know, turn the on button.
There's something about the rock world and its connection with its audience that I don't see quite as much in classical music. Well, certainly you're up on stage and you're doing a classical concert. You know, you're not going to be improvising typically. You're not interacting with the audience. You know, you should in some ways be able to kind of tune them out. But that's not the way we do this. And, you know, in the rock world, you're up on stage and you are really, you know, the audience is in your grip. And anyway, there's just something about that.
So I think we take that spirit and sort of the jazz spirit and the live performance and the live theater. I think what we're doing, we're at the same time underscoring these films, at the same time going way over the top when we feel it's necessary. And then with the sound effects, you know, it's so multi-layered. And then so interactive at the same time. And the fact that, you know, we might be playing a piece faster than we had rehearsed it, and now we're playing live. So now there's a lot of molding on the fly to fit these scenes. And I think that really makes it exciting, the fact that we're all watching these films and we're able to, you know, jump off script to make the film really work live. And from an audience standpoint, I think that really keeps it coming alive.
Yeah. It's like, even though we are quite organized in how we do this, but every time there's a different thing happening. You know, sometimes they'll run the films at the wrong speed, and so we've got to adapt. So you hear us creating the score or recreating it every time. It's a visceral experience.
Does it, for you guys, I mean, as much as you're saying you're bringing this rock spirit to it, does it sort of scratch a different musical itch for you to do this than some of the other projects that you've been involved with or are still involved with?
Well, completely, because most musical projects, it's just the music is the centerpiece. This, we are just the supporting characters. Even when we are over the top, it's, you know, we are subservient to the film. So you get a nice response. I mean, it's hard at first, because you're taking a huge leap of faith through the whole performance, because as a live musician, you can look at your audience generally and see how they feel about you, and then react.
Adjust accordingly.
Right. They hate you, they love you, at least you know. or they're bored to tears, but at least you know. But if they're watching the film, you have no idea. So you're playing for an hour and a half, 2.5 hours sometimes, and you just have to believe what you're doing really, really works. And then at the end, you know, when they all stand up and cheer, it's like, okay. Good.
I have a little word of caution to the audience. They don't recognize how well we can see what they're doing. And if you are sleeping in that audience, we're aware of it. So.
But you say to yourself, it must be the film. The music, they love the music, but the film is putting them to sleep a little bit here. So you guys, this has taken you all over the world. I mean, you're going to be at the Somerville Theater this weekend, but you've literally gone all over the world doing this, right?
It's amazing. Yeah, completely amazing. We've been as far as New Zealand. We played in Budapest, Hungary. We played in above the Arctic Circle in Finland, St. Petersburg, Russia, all over the place. And it looks like we're most likely going to the Ukraine in May for another trip. Crazy. Mm-hmm.
Wow. That's great.
To proudly represent our country for the U.S. Embassy in the Ukraine.
That's a pretty tall order.
Duh.
It may be a mistake for the government. We'll see.
Yeah.
If there still is a government at that time.
Yeah, you never know. You never know. But, you know, all this from what you thought was just a one-time gig, a couple of guys getting together one time.
You never know. I mean, sometimes you fall into this place. If you keep moving and you find a current and you work with it, then sometimes it really goes.
All right. Well, you guys are going to be at the Somerville Theater doing three Buster Keaton shorts this Saturday. Ken Winokur, Terry Donahue, Roger Miller, the Alloy Orchestra. Thanks for being with us here on Boston Public Radio.
All right. Thank you.
My pleasure. It's a
privilege. Yes.
And here comes Callie Crossley into the studio. Callie, I'm thinking I'm going to go to the Somerville Theater to check out this Alloy Orchestra Buster Keaton thing on Saturday. But before I go, I might want to open up a nice bottle of wine. Any recommendations for me?
Yeah, we got a few for making it through the end of winter. And
all right.
They have our wine guru right here to talk to me about it.
I'm going
to
look forward to it. I will be listening.
All right. Very good. I'm Callie Crossley.
I'm Edgar V. Herlick III, and this is Boston Public Radio.